On Tech News Today, Yahoo might buy a boatload of video content. Smartphone users shun the mobile web in favor of distracting apps. And an unauthorized browser extension reveals hidden email addresses on LinkedIn. Or does it? All that and more coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, April 1st, 2014. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple and Android devices are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Tech News Today explores the big stories of the day in conversation with some of the world's best journalists. Our guest co-anchor today is Mark Million, a tech writer and editor for Global Tech at Bloomberg. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Mike.
Really glad to have you. Now, you just posted something just a few minutes ago that looks pretty exciting. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we've been working for a couple of months on a Bloomberg special report on innovation. It's a broad topic, but we've got it pretty well represented from a number of angles inside and outside Silicon Valley. One of the pieces talks about, you know, how to innovate to prevent people from doing stupid things, and it's centered on Google's efforts to minimize phishing email attacks and sort of some of the things that don't work and how people respond to pressures by computers. So it's a pretty interesting story. I worked on a piece on Samsung's efforts to transform from a fast follower kind of, which is in the news right now with the Apple trial, into an innovator. Now that they're kind of at the top of their game, dominating the electronics world, where do they go from here? So it's a cool package. Definitely check it out at Bloomberg.com/tech.
Sounds great, but I have my doubts whether you'll ever get people to stop doing stupid things, because that's what people do. And speaking of stupid things, today is April Fool's Day. We're not going to be doing any April Fool's jokes here. We have no sense of humor here on Tech News Today, and we're absolutely against any sort of humorous or lighthearted activity of any kind. So just so you've been warned. Well, let's get to the news. Yahoo may be in talks to buy a video syndication and advertising company called News Distribution Network, according to an exclusive in the Wall Street Journal by Doug McMillan. The sale price could be about $300 million, according to the report, and Doug McMillan himself is here to provide more details. Welcome, Doug.
Hey, Mike.
So what is NDN, and why would Yahoo want to buy them?
So NDN is a video syndication service, and that means that they don't actually create any videos themselves. They sort of act as a matchmaker between local TV stations and other content creators who have, you know, thousands and thousands of new video clips covering sports, politics, and other news topics every day. And they match that with publishers around the web, thousands of newspaper sites, including AP sites, McClatchy, Cox, LA Times, New York Daily News, that run those clips and run ads alongside those clips. So what this would give Yahoo is a bigger, much bigger footprint of video clips all around the web. And perhaps it would give Marissa Meyer, a step towards achieving what she really wants to do, which is to compete with Google's YouTube and be one of the biggest video properties on the internet.
That desire to compete with YouTube has been around since before Marissa Meyer got to Yahoo. The company hasn't had much luck in the acquisitions department. They tried and failed to buy Daily Motion. They tried and failed to buy Hulu. And they even tried and failed to buy NDN itself, I believe, last year. Do you think they'll have better luck yet next time, if in fact this is what they're trying to do?
So the talks are still early. We hear that a deal might not be reached for several weeks. The deal could fall apart, as those previous examples that you mentioned, Hulu and Daily Motion. But I do think that Marissa Meyer is very intent on video right now. There was a report last week on the blog Recode talking about how Yahoo was going after a lot of the most popular creators of content on YouTube to come over to Yahoo, and she's essentially giving them better ad rates and trying to compete with Google for those popular YouTube creators. So it does seem to be that there's a movement afoot right now at Yahoo to really emphasize video and to really cast Yahoo and its websites as a rival to YouTube. Still a lot smaller in terms of the numbers of videos viewed on Yahoo every month, but I think that buying NBN and completing this deal could go a long way towards getting Yahoo to be one of those kind of top leading video sites.
Yeah, Doug, as you noted in your story, NDN is number four in terms of video sites. Yahoo's number five. And they're both separately, what, like 24 times smaller than Google? So even a combined NDN Yahoo, is that going to make a dent?
I think what, so YouTube is just far and away the market leader with 12.5 billion video views served a month. And that's, yeah, many times the number two and number three. I think what Yahoo and what Marissa might be arguing as part of her pitch to potential creators of content or advertisers on Yahoo is that they are going to have a higher degree of quality content. A lot of those video views, those billions of video views on YouTube are, you know, the skateboarding cat videos or stuff that's user-generated, it's harder to monetize, whereas Yahoo's trying to go after a lot more kind of professionally produced content, and that's certainly what NBN would provide, and that's kind of falls in order of the other stuff that she's been going after, which is doing licensing deals, like getting the entire catalog of Saturday Night Live episodes on Yahoo. So I think that there's a movement towards going to quality. YouTube, of course, is also trying to do that as well and investing in really kind of helping its content creators create more quality professional video. But at the end of the day, advertisers who are, you know, putting the money towards these things are going to want stuff that looks more like TV. So I think that might be an opportunity for Yahoo.
You know, the NDN content sounds pretty boring from the descriptions I've read, mostly local news, as I understand it. Is this really going to help YouTube compete? I mean, I understand the desire to have more professionally produced content. I think you also need the amateur stuff because that's really what drives a lot of the eyeballs on a viral sense. But is that your understanding as well? This is mostly local TV news, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's also, if you start thinking about how Yahoo could use this, there's that collection of 100,000 videos that they have. But I think that is mostly local news, sports, politics, boring clips, as you put it. But I think there's potentially an opportunity for Yahoo to use the distribution of partner sites to distribute some of its own video. You know, Yahoo creates a lot of its own original content, and that needs a home as well. So potentially there's an opportunity for Yahoo to get kind of a economy of scale with this purchase, where they could actually get a bigger footprint for their video creators. You know, and vice versa, the content on YouTube could, you know, help drive more traffic and eyeballs to Yahoo.
So Yahoo is primarily used as a kind of like a national portal. I mean, I don't think anybody really thinks of Yahoo for their local news. So is this maybe part of a bigger play to kind of serve local centric video and maybe news content to people further down the road on Yahoo?
I honestly don't know how the local news element fits in. I think that in general, having more video content on Yahoo would help monetize more of the eyeballs and keep people. The typical Yahoo user shows up to yahoo.com and maybe reads a few news articles and maybe goes over and looks at their email. Yahoo has this massive homepage, and they need to figure out how to keep people on their pages for longer. So if they're going into a news article and a video is there and they can serve up a video, that'll keep people viewing Yahoo pages for longer periods of time and potentially viewing more ads. If they can combine video with other elements of entertainment coverage, Tumblr, other parts of the Yahoo empire, perhaps they can make more money on those pages rather than just having a lot of visitors kind of flow through, you know, drive by through Yahoo's homepage or its email service without really looking and many ads are engaging with a lot of the content.
And of course, NDN also has some experience in serving up ads with their video. Doug, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today and explaining this story to us.
Thanks, Mike. Good to be with you.
All right. You can find Doug at WSJ.com and also on Twitter at DMAC1. Well, in a sec, we're going to look at the mobile app scene and how mobile apps are clobbering the mobile web. But first, I want to tell you about Gazelle. Gazelle is an awesome site that will buy your used gadget. They will find a price for you. They'll display the price for you, and then they will send you cash money very quickly for that device so you can buy the next device. I'm already looking at the new HTC One, and that looks pretty sweet, and I'm kind of thinking how I'm going to fund it. It's a possibility that I may fund the next phone the same way I funded the last one, which is subsidized by the old phone that I sent to Gazelle. To check this out, just go to gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. You find the phone that you'd like to sell to them. You enter in the condition of the phone and also the particulars, and they'll quote you a price. And they'll send you a free box, and it's all prepaid shipping and all that kind of stuff. And then you just put the device in the box, send it to them, and they give you money fast. They pay either by check or by PayPal, or I think the best option is an Amazon gift card, which will get you an extra 5%. And you know you're probably going to be buying stuff on Amazon.com anyway. Resistance is futile with buying things on Amazon. But this is a fantastic service because if you go to this site and you see a price, and then you sort of like dither and procrastinate, you have 30 days, and they'll still honor that price. So you can send it in a few weeks. That's what I did with my Moto X. I waited pretty much 3.5 weeks. I sent it in, and they gave me the exact price they quoted, even though the value of that phone probably went down during that period. Gazelle has paid more than $100 million to over 700,000 customers, and one of the great services that they provide is they will wipe your data for free. So everybody should be concerned about their data getting out in the wild. They will make sure that doesn't happen. So find out what your Apple or Android device is worth. Just take a minute, go to gazelle.com to find out. And you should do it now because your device is probably losing value the longer you wait. Well, new data from a mobile app measurement and advertising company called Flurry says the average user spends 6 times more smartphone time using native apps compared to the mobile web. Dean Takahashi is the lead writer for GameSpeed at VentureBeat, and he joins us here to explain this. Welcome, Dean.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. Hey, so what do you suppose is driving this trend away from the mobile web and toward apps? Is there something unappealing about using a web browser on a mobile device, or are just apps getting better, or what's happening here?
Well, Flurry reported this surprising sort of study that, 86% of time spent on mobile devices is spent in apps, and only 14% is spent on the mobile web. And it's sort of counterintuitive because last year it was just 80%. And so while everybody has been predicting that the mobile web will grow thanks to technologies like HTML5, Flurry has found that that's not the case. Yes, it's true that if you tailor your app for a particular mobile device, it's going to run better and faster. And that matters to a lot of different applications out there, especially games. So HTML5 will run across a lot of different web browsers, and you can have you can get into an app just by going to it on a browser on your phone. But you may have trade-offs in how well that performs. And so that's sort of the fundamental trade-off between apps and the mobile web. And there's implications from that because a lot of companies have been sort of devising their strategy on the expectation that the mobile web is going to take over.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see a couple of trends sort of converging here. One of them is the total dominance of iOS and Android in the smartphone space. And of course, the other one is the great migration from, desktop usage to mobile usage. So people are using mobile more and they're using iOS and Android more. So that really kind of, to me, that signals a kind of denigration of the value of HTML5 from a development platform point of view. Doesn't it make a lot more sense for a lot of website developers or whatever to simply make iOS and Android apps and forget about HTML5?
Well, again, I mentioned that trade-off. You can write something once for the mobile web and spread it across more platforms more easily. So you can consider a, sort of a hybrid strategy in that respect. But if you are designing for apps, then you're targeting the vast majority of the market. And ad dollars that are spent should really follow where the time is spent. And that's not perfectly happening yet in the mobile space. And I think developers, publishers just may not be as aware as they should be that that apps still have this commanding lead, and they should design for the apps first, and that advertisers should also sort of figure out their strategies of tailoring their ads for the app space.
So, Dean, what might the breakthrough be for advertising within apps? I mean, are we essentially waiting for the advertisers to catch on, or do we need sort of a better model of advertising within apps?
Well, I think that 3D technology coming through things like WebGL, which is a 3D format that is web friendly, are coming, and as soon as this gets widespread adoption across, not only the developers, but also gets built into the web browsers, and then is supported in each device that's made. Those are a lot of big steps that have to happen, but that could go a long way toward closing the performance gap that you see between how well a native app works versus how well a mobile web app works.
Now, Dean, about a third of the usage of these apps are gaming on both iOS and Android. Runners-up include social networking and watching videos. It seems like people are using their smartphones almost entirely for distractions, for entertainment. Where do productivity, fitness, and like things like reading and news magazines and books fit into all this? Are they are people using their smartphones for productive applications like that?
They are barely using them. About 2% of the time spent on mobile devices was with productivity apps last year, and that did double to 4%, but it's still a very tiny percentage. And if you think about it, I mean, only this week did Microsoft finally make the biggest productivity of apps of all really work well on something like the iPad. It's been a slow sort of steady gain, but indeed, I mean, do you really want to work on a small screen while you're on the run, or would you rather be productive in some other way on a desktop at home?
I'd rather just goof off with my smartphone and forget about the productivity on the desktop, but that's just me. So anyway, Dean, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks again. You can find Dean at VentureBeat.com and also on Twitter at Dean Talk. That's DeanTak. Well, Twitter made major moves this week to boost its connection to the world of television. The company acquired two TV-related companies in Europe, including France's Mesograph and the UK's Second Sync. Twitter also announced that it's increasing its partnership with Kantar Media, a marketing research firm. Tom Cheridar is a staff writer for VentureBeat, and he joins us to tell us about this. Welcome, Tom.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going great. So what do Mesograph and Second Sync do, actually?
They really kind of go in and help assess the engagement factor that people are engaging brands or other TV programming. They do a lot of what companies that Twitter's acquired previously in the U.S. One of them that comes to mind is Bluefin. They're really good with data and analytics and judging, like, basically how engaged people are when they're interacting with this kind of content. And Twitter's really trying to get that portion because the TV advertising industry budget is it's over $60 billion per year annually. So it's in their best interest to try to figure out how to get a big chunk of that.
Now, Bluefin is a company that Twitter's already acquired, but they're for the U.S. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So this is ultimately, just to boil it down, it's about gathering data so that they can sell ads on Twitter that are more expensive and that may be aligned with Twitter advertising. Is that your understanding as well?
Yeah, they want to become the social component of television. The reason they want to do this is because, number one, it's a very lucrative opportunity. Number two, no one else is there yet. Even Google is having trouble trying to get a large chunk of the TV ad budget for YouTube. I think there was a story yesterday talking about how they're offering audience guarantees, which is like an old school TV network tactic to get advertisers to run commercials on primetime and other programming. So they, you know, nobody has really broken into this world, and Twitter's they're probably in the best position. These two acquisitions represent how they want to do this for the rest of the world, not just the U.S.
So, Tom, where does this leave the specialty TV social apps like Miso and GetGlue that were hot a couple of years ago, but many of them, I think, have gotten acquired and some of them shut down? So is there sort of a move away from these kind of like TV-centric apps to more catch-alls like Twitter and maybe Facebook to an extent?
Well, if you ask those companies, of course, they're going to tell you no, that they're as vibrant as ever. But, you know, the last 2 years, we've seen nothing but consolidation, acquisitions, a lot of shutdowns. Twitter's identified this place. And then, you know, all these other companies are going to have to figure out how to stay relevant and make money, because Twitter wants to kind of offer the same services. They want to be the component that measures people who are interacting with brands and while they're watching TV. So.
Well, it's fascinating. We'll be watching this closely. I know that Facebook wants to replace Twitter as the main social network for television viewing and that sort of thing. They're just beginning on this effort, it appears to me. But I think that Twitter's way ahead, and the fact that they're going global with this sounds like they're probably doing the right thing for their business. Tom, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News Today and telling us about this story.
Thank you.
All right, you can find Tom at VentureBeat.com and also on Twitter at TChed. Well, a mandatory kill switch could save consumers $2.6 billion every year, according to research out of Creighton University. A kill switch is the ability to remotely erase smartphones when they're lost or stolen. With us is Dave Smith, the news editor for ReadWrite, to explain this story. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. Is $2.6 billion a lot? It sounds like a lot of money, but in the larger scheme of things, is that as big a chunk of change as it sounds?
Last time I checked, anything more than $1 billion was a pretty big chunk of change.
Unless you're Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, unless you're Mark Zuckerberg. But I would say that most of us aren't. But still, yeah, there's a lot of money to be had here. And it's mostly money that's saved through insurance premiums. You know, carriers can charge a lot of money for protection plans that include data theft or smartphone theft, rather. But without anything like this in place, if there were a kill switch, rather, to protect people, these insurance premiums would pretty much be for nothing, and people wouldn't have to pay that much money. Currently, I think people pay around $560 or $580 million per year on stolen smartphones. And, you know, they pay something between $2.6 billion. And actually, according to a report from last year, they paid their top four carriers made about $7.8 billion from their premium insurance plans. So without all this money going to them, consumers would save a lot of money. Obviously, you know, carriers do want some form of protection for consumers, but they don't want to necessarily make it mandatory because that is a lot of money that's going into their pockets and the pockets of the insurers that they work with.
Yeah, Mike, I think it's a good point about the scale of the money there. I think that's about maybe a week and a half to 2 week of iPhone sales, $2.6 billion. So in the larger scheme of things, I'm not so sure. But so what are we giving up in the process if we, you know, sort of make this move to kill switches? I know a lot of people are opposed to this just on sort of principle that they don't want to sort of give any one company control over this decision to kind of revoke any information on your phones. I mean, they're famously Amazon, took back a bunch of 1984 books that they erroneously sold. And I know this is a slightly different case, but what do you think we're giving up here, Dave, in the move to kill switches?
Well, I think, Mark, you just said it. There are a lot of concerns about just giving up this this right to people's cell phones or smartphones wholesale. I think that people would prefer to have this kind of control in their own hands as opposed to the hands of Apple or Google or their own carriers. Even though Apple already has a form of its own kind of kill switch and activation lock, which is a feature in iOS 7, and Samsung is working on its own. You know, Google has the Android Device Manager. There are kinds of kill switches that are out there, but it's not mandatory yet. And there's still a lot of people that suffer from, you know, from smartphone theft, you know, physically, but also just they have to pay for it. You know, it hits them hard in the pockets. So, you know, the kill switch idea on paper, yeah, why not have something that, you know, to protect people against theft? But when it comes down to, do people actually want to give this kind of license or this kind of, I guess, give this control, really, to carriers and Apple and Google? I think a lot of people have problems with that. So it would really have to be a very, it would have to be very specific in the wording of the laws to make sure that whatever it is, that this kill switch couldn't be hacked. I think that's the main concern of the CTIA, is that this is something that could be a feature of software that could be hackable, and therefore something that, you know, we're bricking other people's cell phones could be a prank or a trend, which is not really something that would be fun for anybody, considering how much they rely on smartphones and any kind of mobile device these days. So
could you ever really make it unhackable? I mean, people are so bad at choosing passwords. I think, you know, a lot of people have the 4-digit 1234000 passwords on their phones. So even if you make this mandatory, how do you make it mandatory that people are actually smart about how they use it?
Well, I think that's a great question, Mark. And it's going to be, it's going to take some work on lawmakers to actually kind of put this wording in place to actually make sure that people are protected. But I would say that this has been an issue in the past. Credit card makers even needed to find a way to protect card holders, you know, and so they themselves installed a number of cryptography solutions into their cards, and it became a standard that credit card makers had to do. That could be something that we see in cell phones. It could be something that is completely unreadable to most, and something that's encrypted and, you know, completely protected. So it's either completely safe or it's broken. Obviously, we'd prefer for the former, not the latter. But, you know, this is something that is definitely it's a worthy discussion. And there seems to be strong arguments for both sides, especially the point that you just mentioned, which is what's not hackable these days. But at the same time, you know, it's costing consumers a lot of money every time that a smartphone is stolen. And these are important to us. So, you know, finding the right means of protection, not maybe it's not a kill switch, maybe it's something in between what we have now and a kill switch. But, you know, investigating these things are important.
And of course, this has to be mentioned, is there's an interesting dynamic here that that is at play, which is that the alternative to mandatory kill switches is optional kill switches, and just let the market decide, let consumers choose that option if they want it. The problem with that is that doesn't provide the deterrent that a mandatory kill switch would. If it was mandatory and all phones had a kill switch, that theoretically provide a real disincentive for thieves to steal these things. If it's optional, then they, you know, crooks might as well just go ahead and nab phones anyway, just in case the user didn't actually choose that option. Dave, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today and explaining this issue. It's I really enjoyed your article on this.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, you can find Dave at readwrite.com and also on Twitter at RedLetterDave. Well, a free new browser extension called CellHack adds an unauthorized button on LinkedIn profiles that appears to let you see hidden email addresses. The extension doesn't actually hack LinkedIn. Instead, it checks publicly available data and, barring that, actually guesses the email address. Alyssa Bereznak is a technology columnist for Yahoo, and she discovered this extension, and she's here to explain it to us. Welcome.
Hi.
So LinkedIn can't possibly be happy about all this, can they?
No, they are not happy. CellHack is very happy to have LinkedIn as a tool that they can use, but LinkedIn actually sent a cease and desist letter to the company almost immediately after they discovered it existed.
It's kind of an interesting issue for them to be upset about, because it appears that they add a button to LinkedIn, and it appears that they reveal an email address that is in the LinkedIn database. But in fact, neither of those is true. It puts a button at the browser level, and it finds the email addresses outside of LinkedIn. So really, to a certain extent, LinkedIn doesn't have a case against this extension, do they?
I mean, exactly. It's kind of amazing, because you think that a social network that you trust all of your information with would be able to control something like this. But in fact, it's a browser issue. Because this company is essentially scraping public information from the page that you're on and using an algorithm to guess what the best email for a particular contact is, LinkedIn has no control over this. If this was an app that, you know, sort of worked within the system, LinkedIn could immediately control it. But it's kind of an issue that it looks so professional. I mean, it's got the button that says hack in that you press to actually get the email looks almost exactly like a button you would press in LinkedIn usually. So it could really sort of trick you into thinking there's a vulnerability there, but LinkedIn swears that there isn't.
So this is almost counterintuitive for LinkedIn to send a cease and desist letter here, because it essentially is giving promotion to a company that most people probably hadn't heard about before. I'd never heard of this before, and it sounds awesome. I'm going to install it right after the show. What are the sort of the implications of why send a cease and desist letter to this company that, you know, may have just had it one news cycle and fallen off the map?
Well, I honestly think that they're a little concerned, because there is something that a user sacrifices if they do choose to use this plugin, which is that the plugin basically looks behind your shoulder as you're browsing LinkedIn and can use or exploit any information from your direct contacts when you visit their pages. So I think LinkedIn is worried about being held responsible for this information being distributed. And, you know, it is something to be concerned about. But if you're a headhunter or a salesperson and you need a contact, then you have to weigh those two things. I mean, would you be okay with sacrificing your information just so you get the contact of a really important person? That's something you have to decide.
Yes, I would. And Mark, when you go and install this, you're going to find that their servers are probably overloaded, thanks to large extent to Alyssa's story and then all the pickups that are happening around this story. So I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today and telling us about this really interesting plugin.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thanks so much.
All right, great. You can find Alyssa at yahoo.com and also on Twitter. And I'm going to spell it out, AlyssaBerezNak. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.
Well, in other words, in other news, it seems like everyone is doing TV-like original programming these days, from Netflix to Amazon. Now even AOL is getting into the act. And no, this isn't an April Fool's joke. AOL has commissioned a reality show called Connected, which is an adaptation of an Israeli series. Set in New York City, the U.S. Connected will enable viewers to watch five cast members as they record their lives with handheld video cameras. Sounds a lot like the Twit Network in some ways. The half-hour show premieres in January 2015 on the AOL On Network. What do you think about that, Mark? You're gonna rush out and watch the show on the AOL On Network?
So this is essentially real world with GoPros.
Exactly.
Is this somehow a groundbreaking series? I mean, AOL has clearly been moving like, you know, Yahoo that we talked about at the top of the show and many other companies toward video because the ad rates there are so much higher. But, you know, the strategy of commissioning entertainment shows, I mean, it's such a hits-driven business, which you can see by Netflix, which you can see by Amazon Instant Video's so many misses, that, you know, to put all your eggs in one basket, if that's sort of AOL's move here, is a bit questionable of a move. I think, you know, you'll have to follow a Netflix or an Amazon model where you invest a ton of money in a lot of different content creators and hope that one of them sticks.
Yeah, I think the larger story here is that everyone's trying to differentiate with their own original content, which is leading to a world where it's going to be almost impossible to see anything you want to see. And what we really want is to be able to see anything we want, anytime we want. And we're moving away from that world thanks to moves like this. It's going to be really difficult. You'll have to have a Netflix account and an Amazon Prime account. Now you're going to have an AOL on whatever it is that they have. And it's going to go on and on as people keep adding content. Yahoo's talking about adding content. Everybody's doing content. So it's like, how do you see whatever you want? It's
looking But still, all of those good. Subscriptions don't even come close to adding up to the price of a monthly cable plan. So yeah. I'll take that model any day so I can pick and choose what I want versus a $100 cable package.
Yeah, good point. Well, Mark, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today and sharing the anchor desk with me, virtually speaking.
Thanks, Mike. Always fun.
All right. Well, thanks again. And if you like breaking news, you should follow Twit's breaking news feed on Twitter, which is Twit News. We'd also like to invite you to join our Google Plus community and also circle our Google Plus page by searching for Tech News Today on Google Plus and then signing up. We also want to hear from you. Send an email to TNT at twit.tv and leave us a voicemail by calling 260-TNT-SHOW. And don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Mike Elgin. We'll see you tomorrow.